And we are live. Hello, dear starshines. Welcome, welcome. Welcome to another edition of the Lunchtime Chats. I'll pause here and give everybody some time to get on board. Obviously, I'm no longer in Mexico. I'm not in the sunny, warm Caribbean coast anymore. I'm back in the Rocky Mountains, making my trek to BC. And I'll talk about that in a minute, what we're doing. Hey, Beverly, good to see you, darling. Let me know that the sound is okay. Let me know that the sound is okay, please. I'm traveling with the dear starshine, Laura, who's also in Lightbody, and we're going north to an undisclosed location to work with. Okay, thanks, Bev. To work with the certain interdimensional beings of the Fae realm, and in a magical place. So this has become an annual event where those of us who have been training in light body, enhancing, removing blind spots, enhancing our senses, where we have this beautiful meeting place where we get to have like a powwow with different interdimensional beings, such as the Fae being, Sasquatch, stuff like this, you know? And that's what we're on our way to go do. For those of you who are new, either listening to this live or in the recording, my name is Christina, and I am an acceleration expert. That is a consciousness acceleration expert. And we are here to talk about those topics and issues that are significant for us starseeds, wayshowers, and new paradigm visionaries. We have capacities, we have abilities that are not necessarily embraced by our larger human family, and therefore we have very unique perspectives to the kind of events that are unfolding in today's world. So I am here to do to the best of my ability to provide a liberated perspective to these different things that are going on that perhaps have us reeling in downward spirals of worry or disempowerment, or maybe we're just, you know, it's something new that we don't know, you know, how, you know, we don't have other ways to think about it. We've never really been challenged with coming into right relationship with it. So those kinds of things we're here to talk about. So welcome, welcome, welcome. Hello. Hello, darling. Thank you for being here. So those of you guys joining in, say hi. Let me know you're here. Hey, Luna Rio. Good to see you, love. Good to see you, Bev. And just so you guys know, in the comments here, I have a few announcements to make before we dive into anything. And that is, you know, the chats in their entirety is no longer posted on YouTube. Many of you who are regular watchers already know that, but there are some new folks that are joining in on the chats and are looking for them. So I want to let you know that they are no longer posted on YouTube because there are, you know, there's a lot of censorship and things going on, and there's things that I talk about. Sometimes I don't even know that it's a topic of taboo. And when they pull videos, they don't tell you what was talked about that violates their standards. So rather than play that whole game, we just decided to eliminate having the entire chat posted in YouTube for that reason. So if you want to catch the replay or share the replay, there is a few hours after this chat ends, you can catch the replay on Spotify, and the link to that is in the comments here. And then if you want to get the video, make sure you're on our emailing list and you'll get the link sent to you the following day via our blog post. So that's the way to get to those replays. And the replay is when you use that link, it's going to take you to a Rumble replay link, just so you know. And another announcement that I have is that you guys know I'm like so faithful doing these chats every single week, but because of the remote location and where we're going to be to interact and have a powwow with our interdimensional friends, there's no internet access where we're going, so there will be no chat next week. So, but do know that we will definitely, I'll catch you guys up with everything that happened. those of you who are watching last year when I was coming off of the chats, I literally left the area where we were with the, you know, we were exiting where we were camping and went right into the chat. So I was like super blissed out and super altered mode. And I didn't even realize until I watched the chat later. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm just like on cloud nine talking with you guys. It's pretty funny. But yeah, let's go ahead and talk about that though, you know. Hey, Tigger, good to see you. Hey, Shanti, good to see you, darling. Thank you for saying hi. So, you know, exospecies is a major part of the awakening of humanity. And so what do I mean by exospecies? So exospecies is a very broad term for for beings, intelligent beings that are not human. Okay. So exospecies could include extraterrestrials, what we call ETs, aliens. It can be like the spiritual beings that have been coming and counseling different wisdom keepers over the ages. So it could mean like the Pleiadian collectives. It could mean councils of beings. It could mean the Galactic Federation. It could mean, and the Galactic Federation is not one race, guys. It's like hundreds of beings that are on the Galactic Federation. It could be, you know, Sirians. It could be beings, consciousness from the different planets of our particular solar ring. It could be interdimensional beings from inner Earth. It can be fey beings such as gnomes and fairies and trolls and pixies and all this stuff. And I know this all sounds really fantastical, but they really are consciousness that are communicating with humanity. And the reason why these things sound so outlandish and fantastical is because our capacity to communicate with these beings at ease and at will has been shut down over many, many, many generations of training. So mystical beings, such as the Sidhus of India, the different Sifus, grandmasters of the mountains of Tibet and China, the lamas, the Karakakuyaks in South America. I mean, the mystical beings that of this planet have been in communication interdimensionally for many thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So it's not a new idea at all. It's just something that's disconnected from the average human because it's, you know, we think it's imaginary. We're taught that it's, you know, it's not realistic. And when it comes to walking like a regular conditioned human in reality, it is very unrealistic to have communications with interdimensional beings or ETs or Fey or Sasquatch. I mean, it's absolutely outlandish, the idea of these things. But once we start waking up to our capacity as multidimensional beings, it becomes just a matter of fact of life. You know, we can have communications with nature. We can have communications with the spirit of things, right? You guys can imagine, you know, you can have communication with the spirit of the lake, the lady of the lake. You can have communication with the spirits of the forest, tree spirits, flower spirits, plant medicine spirits, you know, so there's lots of life all around us that we as multidimensional humans have access to communicating. Mountains, very potent beings to communicate with. There's entire mystical traditions based on the relationship with mountains, mountain spirits, you know? So this is something that's becoming more and more common as humans. Okay, we're back. I don't know what just happened, but it just started spinning, but we're back. Okay, so my eyes were closed, so I don't know where that got caught off at. So let me go back to, entire mystical traditions based on the communication and relationship with mountain spirits and nature spirits. Okay, so In our particular academy, we have been peeling away blind spots with each other for years, you know, years and years we've been together. And with, you know, new people come in, of course, and some of them stick around. Some of them are just here for little stints, you know. But in general, you know, we have a very, very strong connected community because of the experiences we've had together. You know, we go to these mystical places and we have experiences with stargates. We have experiences with giant mountain beings, swan beings, elemental beings, you know. And when you have communications and experiences like this with other humans, it really helps forge a strong connection. And this strong connection is forged because of a few factors. One, you guys are having mystical experiences together, of course, right? But the other is that there are certain character facets of character that need to be in place in order for people to have these mystical experiences in a healthy way, okay? So when we have communications with celestial beings that present as giant swan beings. This is something that happened many years ago. We were on our way back from a stargate and there is these massive swan beings that were dwarfing the mountains that we were driving towards. And this is the Sangre de Cristo's mountains that we were in. And these are the highest mountains in the highest mountain range in the Castillos United States. All of them are what we call in Colorado 14ers, which means they're all taller than the elevation of 14,000 feet. And these swan beings just dwarfed the mountains. And of course, the place we were at was hyperdimensional, and there's lots of energy vortexes and interdimensional doorways and stuff like that. And we end up going to this place, we call them the huts. And these are ancient huts. They predate all other indigenous cultures of the area. They're ancient stargates in their own right. Some of them are direct portals to Pleiadian frequencies. Some are direct portals into the underworlds with the ant people. Some of them are portals that go other places, right? So we go to the huts, and after we see these swan people, we go into the huts and we end up having this beautiful connection with the ancient grandmothers and the beings of Cygnus. And of course, you know, and the reason why I'm mentioning this is because when you have a community of people who are having these experiences over and over again, there's certain facets within our character that need to be in place. And this is where it's important to be in relationship with other humans. And that is because you learn how to be transparent in your character. You learn how to be authentic in who you are. You learn, because we have all this bombardment on the outside that feeds us all this information and validates all these things that are validating things that are not the truth of who we are. This is why humanity is so confused. So when we are in community with people who are committed to truth, to transparency, to authenticity, right, we help each other in a big way to cultivate those connections inside of ourselves. So that in that way, having a community of people to connect with and have communication with in that way, it enhances our capacity to be authentic within ourselves and to live according to our own authentic truth. And this is where synchronicity starts to become a way of life. This is where interdimensional beings from all sorts of spectrums of reality can start to come into our awareness, and we can start building relationships, you know. So it's, you know, right now in the stage of where humanity is, it's like we're kind of like the outliers. Like what we do seems very unusual and out there to the average human. But really, what we're doing, according to the different elders and immortal masters that I've been worked with in this life and who have taught me and trained me, is that this is what the actual natural organic human is capable of, right? Of walking into a landscape and feeling instantly connected with the keepers and spirits of those lands, having an open conduit inside of oneself where whatever is needed just comes to you. It just comes via synchronicity, you know? So it's a really worth our while to go out of our way to connect with people that are doing these things. And this is something that the Sasquatch, and I know this sounds really crazy out there for people who've never heard anybody talk about Sasquatch before, or have only talked about them in the context of Bigfoot, right? So Sasquatch are major forerunners. They are making huge efforts to reach out to humanity to help us remember how to be human again, help us remember how to be in community again, and where community is something that makes us stronger, that builds our bonds, versus something that we have to tolerate and you know, cope with. Okay. Now, my kids are young adults, and they work regular jobs, and to hear them talk, it's very interesting. It's like their whole reality is based on how on coping mechanisms, building coping mechanisms so they can recover in between times when they're dealing with the public, you know. And I imagine a lot of humanity is like that. It's like people, you know, prepare themselves to go and deal with other humans, because of dealing with other humans is very stressful. It's difficult. It's, you know what I mean? Maybe the work situation is difficult, the boss situation, or, you know, whatever. So a lot of humans are in this relationship to the larger human family, and one of stress, and one of not wanting to deal, right? Some people would even maybe assume that working a 9-to-5 is something that like will suck the soul right out of you, which can be the case. It can, that absolutely, all those things can be the case. But what I want to, the idea that I want to weave in here is that it doesn't have to be that way, because we are interconnected with all of reality. We're interconnected with nature. We are interconnected with the realm of atoms and molecules, of elemental beings, of earth beings, of cosmic beings. We are interconnected with all these levels, that it's possible for us to dream into being whatever it is that we want, whatever it is that suits us. Okay. So maybe, you know, it's time to start dreaming into being the perfect work situation. Okay. Now, my particular situation is extremely unique to me. You know, I worked really hard starting at a very young age, practically slave labor, actually. You know, I worked on farms, and I shovel shit, and starting at the age of like 11 years old, I worked 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for years on a farm. And the side benefit that I was getting from that was that there was a special situation that developed where I was, in exchange for payment, I worked like that. I wasn't even paid money. In exchange for payment, I had access to the side of the a certain number of horses to train with. Some of them were really rough around the edges, and some were very well trained show horses. And then, of course, there was a trainer that was brought in to train me. And of course, through synchronicity, you know, I was a natural at that, because I've been a horseman in many different other lifetimes. So it was something that came very natural. And the owner of that whole situation was able to have her horses shown again, because I was, you know, I was able to do that. But, you know, I had to work really hard, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. I thought that was normal. It was not normal. I didn't find that out until way later. And I realized, oh my gosh, I was like practically slave labor at this place. And my dad thought it was okay, you know, but you know, there's a lot of components putting in there. It's like, I didn't feel like my soul was being robbed at all working that hard. You know what I mean? I mean, it was hard work. You guys, if you ever clean stalls, horse stalls, and feed, like take care of wild, like, you know, stock, farm stock, it's a lot of work. Haying and watering and making sure everybody's healthy and keeping them groomed and making, you know, rotating everybody through their pastures and, you know, and dealing with other kinds of, you know, cows and other animals. It just, you know, it's all work. It's a lot of hard work. But for some reason, that whole thing was feeding my soul. So I was happy to put in that kind of work. I was absolutely thrilled that I got to go and go to all these horse shows and show all these horses. And, you know, I was really thrilled about all of that. So all that work meant, I mean, it did drag sometimes, especially when it was below zero outside, you know, but, you know, I was happy to do that. And of course, it was exactly what I needed to grow in the life that I was growing into. So it wasn't until, you know, in my early 20s where, you know, that started to shift. And again, I would find myself in a whole nother situation. I was like, I was working for corporate, but not, I was autonomous. I was like a subcontractor for corporate. I was like in the perfect time, in the perfect place for this perfect situation to show up for me, right? So I guess I'm going on this tangent just to just outline that, you know, what is really important for you to do, the circumstance is going to present. It's just a matter of showing up for it, right? So I want to help you guys eliminate these ideas that are in your head that, you know, if you do this, then that means that, right? If you do that, then that means this. I want you guys to eliminate that out of your head, if you can, and, or at least start, you know, working in meditation to delete those frame ups, because we are one with everything that's around us. The universe is constantly communicating with us, whether we understand the communication or not, doesn't matter. But settling in to the truth that the universe is constantly communicating to us. It's communicating to us through the circumstances that arises. It's communicating to us via the wind, via the raptors, the different animals that come into our awareness, or the spiders or the ants, or, you know what I mean? It's constantly communicating to us. Maybe there's shapes happening in clouds, you know? This is the universe always speaking to us. And it's not speaking to us about random stuff. It might feel random because of our frame up to reality, but it's all important. It's all significant. You know, it's up to us to figure out what the significance is. It's up to us to translate. And this is where the art of divination starts to come into play. This is why so many different masters and sudhus and, you know, kuyaks would do divination, is because it helps us translate the language that's being spoken to us on a second by second, moment by moment basis from the universe, right? So when you take that into consideration, opportunities that come to you are opportunities for you to discover something about yourself, or to step deeper into something for you. And these frame ups that tell us that if this, then that, those are very limiting. They're actually blinding us to the bigger picture that's trying to present. Okay. And this is why we talk about unwinding blind spots in light body, because these blind spots are so thick and so heavy. Something can be, and I talk about this all the time, guys, but something could be right in front of your face. It could be right in front of your face your entire life. Your blind spot, our blind spots are so thick, we can't see it. We can't touch it. We can't sense it. We're completely oblivious to the existence, even though it might be something that we've always wanted to know or something we've always wanted to have. It's like these blind spots are so thick, we won't be able to interact with it. But as soon as we go deep enough within and start dissolving and unwinding the depths of different agreements and belief systems and assumptions and all this stuff, we start unwinding the energy of that throughout time and space through the Akasha, and the blind spot gets lifted. All of a sudden, you know, you're just driving down the road and, oh, look here, this thing you've been thinking about or wanting your whole life, right there, it's right in front of your face. You know, it's quite literally, it's the biggest trip. And people have a hard time really understanding the depth of this until you experience it yourself. And this is something that's happened over and over again. And I've talked about this in the previous chat, but I just need to remind you guys this, because there are opportunities that are presenting to us that are everything that we've wanted. Okay. I'm talking about opportunities, like things that we talk to the universe about that we want, that we desire, that we hope for. And the opportunity that presents is the universe saying, okay, we heard you. Here's the next step. And it may not be like, you know, you can see the forest through the trees. I mean, a lot of times it's a step that all of a sudden takes a right turn. So you can't really see where the step's going, but the opportunities, the universe is offering this opportunity for that next step. Okay. And then it's going to offer another opportunity for another step. And as we unwind our blind spots and our frequency changes, we become more of that frequency match to what it is that we're asking for, what it is the universe is trying to give us. Okay. So just a little heads up to you guys, because the veils are so thin right now and we're getting answered immediately to things. And this is something that the Fae realm is really hard at work teaching us in Light Body, that whatever it is that's really important for us, that we want, that we wish for, that we desire, that you know what I mean? It can happen like that. And they're showing us this over and over and over again in really profound ways. And right now, where a lot of us in Light Body are, is that we're dealing with our shadow pieces around really having that kind of power to our access, right? So it's like, that's part of the journey here of waking up to who we really are and stepping into our interconnectedness and creating exactly what we want, is dealing with the fact that we are realizing how powerful and potent we actually are in these bio suits walking around this planet, okay? Or in this realm, I should say. That's more accurate to me, in this realm. We are so powerful. It's just we're trained and we're also terrified of our own power. So we start to collude with our own blind spots. And that's where community really comes in and can be very helpful. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and check in with some of the comments here. Hello, Creating Momentum. Welcome, welcome, welcome. All right. So Luna Rhea says, I had a dream. Uh-oh, this is really small. I can't see. Sorry. Let me get my glasses here so I can see better. It's because it's really bright outside and it's hard for me. The squinting is kind of, of course my glasses aren't here. All right, there's too much stuff in the back to dig. All right, you guys are going to have to deal with me squinting to try to read this. Okay, it says, I had a dream a few days ago where I lived in a village and I was the only one who, say, a mystical being. I shot it so I could have proof, and as soon as I did, it disappeared. Okay. Okay, now this is interesting that you're saying this. This is important to talk about, actually. It says, she goes on to say, it felt like a past life clearing. Yes. So thank you. That's following up with my thoughts were. So one of the things about the Fae beings, especially right now, is that they desire, and they are going out of their way to give us proof of their existence. Okay. Now, it takes a little while to cultivate somebody who is really in the 3D and is challenged by the idea of fairies and Sasquatch and gnomes and all this other stuff. But they walk you through increment by increment to get you to the place where you truly do believe. And not only do you believe, you're excited about the interaction, you truly want to have that relationship. Because once you start to really want to have that relationship, all these other awarenesses come with that. The awarenesses of how you impact your reality, the awarenesses how everything you do impacts your surroundings. You know what I mean? So they are very kind and compassionate on how they bring themselves forward. Because the Sasquatch particularly have showed me that humans can actually experience psychotic breaks if they get introduced too quickly to these realms, to the existence of these different beings, you know? So part of the journey that I went through in the very beginning, I would say my very beginning of being exposed to Sasquatch, which was in 2012, was validating their existence. It was like this providing proof or providing validation was a really scary prospect. Like every time I started to say things kind of like openly, it was like, it would immediately be followed up with like, oh my gosh, I just put them in danger. You know, every time I talked about or was leading someone into a, you know, something, it was kind of like there was a deep, deep subconscious fear inside of me of causing harm and damage to them in their realm by introducing the wrong people or saying, you know, disclosing something that shouldn't be disclosed, like this kind of thing. And I feel like this speaks to this dream because that's part of the veils that have been set up. It's like there used to be something way back when called the Fairy Accord, where there's an agreement about when humans came into these interdimensional realms and they would interact with these different beings. There was an accord put in place that we would be mutual, hospitable to each other. We would offer food and drink and a safe place, and you know, like some, you know, be hospitality would happen between us. And then what started to shift was humans started to capture these beings. They started to do things with these beings because they weren't believed when they would tell the story. So then we would get obsessed with trying to prove that it was true. And then in that effort, we would do harm. So there was a collective grid that was put down as a heavy veil to deter humans from doing these things so we wouldn't cause harm to these different beings anymore. So you sharing this dream is really connecting me with that dynamic that has been going on between humanity and the fae beings for quite some time. Now, of course, there are certain humans that have had permission or been accepted in the interactions, and like, you know, different mystical beings I talk about. And, you know, that's been so, but that's very few and far between. Usually children are accepted until they get a little older, then they're not, you know, stuff like this would start to happen. All right. So thank you for sharing that, because that's a very real thing. And this is why we actually don't talk about the location that we go to, because it's very sacred. And at the heart of the, you know, at the heart of the word sacred is secret, you know. So, and it's not a secret because it's, you know, kept secret from other people that can't know, but it's more about holding something sacred, as in one cannot be aware until they have the eyes to see, until they have the heart to listen, until they have the awareness to become aware. Right. So this is going deep into the mysteries of the ancestors, of the elders. This is the knowledge that can be known but not told. So this particular gathering that we're doing, you know, we hold it very sacred because there is a beautiful, let's say, overlapping of realms that happen, and a celebration of human, fae, and interdimensional being alike coming together. And lots of beings participate. Trees participate. Fungi participate. Not that we're doing mushrooms or like any kind of hallucinogenics, because that's a big no-no. And when I say that's a no-no, because it's too strong. We are cultivating our capacity to sense subtlety. So plant medicines is not part of the work that we do here. It's about cultivating our deep, deep connection within. So our awareness is in our natural, you know, just our way of being can work to help us build this connection. So, I went on a little bit of a tangent there. So let me go on to our next comment. Our dear sister, Felicia says, who would have known that editing film as a student would influence and support my transformative energetic and shamanic work? It helps me to focus and hold space. loved when I discovered this. Yes, yes, yes. So she's talking about the what I was saying earlier about what's important for you and your journey presents. Nothing is a waste of time. Nothing is a waste of time, you know? And I also encourage my kids too. It's like, you know, cause they're like, what do I want to do with my life when they grow up? You know? And I'm like, hey, you know, I still don't know what I want to do with my life when I grow up. I'm just doing life, right? So, you know, so I just let them know is that as opportunities present, take them, experiment, explore, play, because none of it's going to be a waste of time. You may not see how it connects later down the road, but as things come together and as full circle, as certain cycles come full circle, you will see the wisdom in why you have that skill. You know, you can see the wisdom. All right, dear, I want to say Brother Tigger says, this sounds so much like a Canadian sci-fi show called Lost Girl. I know that show. With the succubi, with the succubus. Okay, yes. Yeah, so, you know, what happens is that they take, so this is part of what the Matrix does. They take sacred things and they trivialize it. They just make it like a sound bite, and they usually reverse things. They'll make the dark be light and the light be dark, you know? Like my actually my daughter was just telling me this morning, there is you guys remember D&D from, well, when I was a kid. We played D&D. We had D&D. I mean, I didn't play myself, but I had friends that played D&D, Dungeons and Dragons. But evidently, it's a lot more popular here with the young group, with the younger generations. And so she was telling me about a D&D, I can't remember what they call it. Well, whatever the storyline was. And in the storyline, you had Baphomet, which was this benevolent dragon. And you had Tiamat, which was this evil dragon. And she's telling me the whole story. And I'm like, wow, this is totally crazy. Like, it's like the exact opposite of what's unfolding in the benevolent, nefarious drama now on this planet. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of talk about the, you know, the cultists, the Satan worshipers and stuff in Baphomet. And then there's this whole Rise of the Feminine story about Tiamat, but Tiamat is the cosmic mother and Baphomet is more of the, you know, the dark side, the against life character. So I was commenting to her about this reversal that's going on in their story. And she says, yeah, that happens all the time. And it's cool because the younger generations are aware. But in that movie or in that show, Lost Girl, they did very similar things. They separated the Fae into dark and light, and you had to be dark or light. And what's really funny about that is that the Fae beings that we talk about or that we communicate with, there's no such thing. Dark and light is irrelevant. It's all just a state of being, and it's all just temporary. You know, so if something is dark or light, it all has to do with your relationship to that being. It has nothing to do with the state of that being itself. It's about your relationship to that being, right? So just a little example of, you know, how these shows, and I love sci-fi, how these shows take things and reverse them. Another one that had a lot of reversals, but was also fascinating was SGU, Stargate, SG-1, that's what it was called. And they had all these aliens that took over people via their brainstem, no tell there, and would take over these beings, and they would live for thousands and thousands of years. And there was one called Baal that ended up living on planet planet for quite some time. He was hiding out on this planet. So it's like they would take all these Egyptian Apophis, all these Egyptian and older ancient Pantheon gods, and have them actually be revealed as these parasitic ETs that were taking over human vessels. Fascinating show, guys, if you guys ever get to see some old stuff. Hey, Tasha, thanks for joining in. Okay, so Tigra says, I'm a Colorado sitta. Look forward to meeting you all. Well, hi. Yeah. Are you meeting us there? Are you coming to our gathering? Are you connected with our Starshine that's organizing this? Is that what you mean? That's interesting. Awesome. Okay, so Tasha. Hey, Tasha. Good to see you, darling. See Christina just joining. Great to catch the tail end of you live. Are we at the tail end? I will catch the replay. Just wanted to say hi while you're on. Oh, okay. Thanks for saying hi, darling. Okay, so there was a lingering topic that I never got to finish last time. And that is the topic of how is it possible to have an enslaved soul, right? So I need to go into galactic history to explain this concept. I know I'm kind of totally switching gears, just priming you guys up, opening up the field so you guys can, see what I'm talking about here. So, we talk about, I was mentioning these interdimensional beings. We have inner earth beings, we have interdimensional beings that live on this plane, but just kind of like phased over a few degrees. We have, of course, the beings that we consider ETs. We have, lots and lots of non-corporeal in our reality beings that we interact with. Non-corporeal means you don't have a physical body, like a bio suit, like we do. And when we interact with these beings, there's these different concepts that get introduced into our sphere. And one of those concepts is that, one, that this is a slave planet, but two, that there are soul groups that are considered to be enslaved soul groups. Okay. And people are like, how can that be? How is that possible? And so I'm going to talk about the mechanics of that, what that looks like, and what the narratives look like. And then I also want to confirm for you guys that you can wake up if you feel like you're a part of a slave group, a slave soul group, because of whatever narrative you're resonating with. You can wake up out of that very easily now. It is not something that is this particular lifetime, this particular time frame. During the changing of the cycles, the changing of the different ages, the changing of the different paradigms, we can wake up out of any soul group commitment that we might find ourselves in. So, to name, I'm just going to give you some names of some very well-known enslaved soul groups. Okay. One of them being Alpha Centauri. The souls from Alpha Centauri, this is our nearest planet by our nearest stars, is considered a enslaved soul group. Why is it considered an enslaved soul group? Because they were invaded and conquered by a nefarious ET race, and those souls were captured through different Akashic structures and brought via technology to this plane, to this Pachamama realm, the realm of the mother, the Earth Mother. Okay. So what that did was it connected through the interdimensional planes, Alpha Centauri, and the collective dynamics going on in that solar ring to our solar ring and to our realm. Okay. Another group that is considered or has been considered in the past as an enslaved group are certain Pleiadian soul groups. And a lot of people talk about them as being dark Pleiadians, but they're not all that way. And that is told to us through the story of the seven sisters. Okay. I'm just answering the question, guys, because it was asked. Okay. This is how my understanding is of it. There could be lots of different understandings and belief systems going on here. So I'm just giving you the what I see going on. And do remember that I see things in many, many nesting dolls creating realities. You can opt out of participating in a particular nesting doll, certain ones that have been incepted into our reality and still exist in this plane without that nesting doll of reality. So all sorts of incepted ideas and beliefs and all this stuff truly are optional. But you have to first discover how it's optional. You have to discover that on your own or with a group, like with what we do with Light Body, something like this, or in the dream realm, stuff like this. Anyway, let me keep going. So, the story of the seven sisters is The seven sisters were relentlessly chased by, I believe, I might be wrong about the god, but I'm pretty sure it was the god Apollo. He lusted after the seven sisters, and they were relentlessly being pursued. And they were trying to save themselves from being violated, from being raped by the being known as Apollo. So what Zeus did, Zeus said to them, I will help you. I will turn you into doves, which is what he did. So in Zeus, instead of saying, Apollo, this is inappropriate behavior to these goddesses, to these divine feminine force, instead of saying, Apollo, this is inappropriate behavior, stop, he continued, allowed the chase to continue, but transformed the seven sisters into doves. Okay, so this story is an encoded story of letting us know that the Pleiadian consciousness is too enslaved, okay, we'll just call them the pantheon, the powers that be, because these pantheons, these are descendants of other beings, you know, the whole Zeus, Apollo, Mercury, you know, all these gods and goddesses, these are descendants of the previous rule. The rule before them, it was the Titans. And before them, it was the Marduk and Enki and Tiamat, you know, the story of the original creator beings. So these are tiers of beings. Oh, okay. Tigger chimes in and says that they thought it was Orion. Yeah, could be. I mean, I remember it the way I remembered it, and who knows if that's actually the accurate thing, because, you know, our memories are not necessarily the most reliable thing. But the point was, is that there is a god, being considered a god, that was relentlessly pursuing the seven sisters. That's the main part of the story. So that is encoding, telling us that they too are enslaved to this power over dynamic. And there's different degrees of enslavement. Sorry, I left that part out. So there's different degrees of enslavement here. Alpha Centauri is enslaved through the Akashic field. Different vows, promises, treaties, agreements, stuff like this, contracts. And then the Pleiadians are enslaved, just not all Pleiadians, but these certain groups of Pleiadians are enslaved within another sort of control system field. Another soul group that's considered enslaved are ones from Orion, the Alpha Draconis. Now, a lot of people would consider the Alpha Draconis as they are the slave masters, right? And there is a version of the narrative where they are the slave masters. But there's also this other narrative where they too are enslaved, along with the Zeta Reticuli, who are also from Orion. Both of these soul groups are enslaved by a highly advanced TI being, TI/AI being, okay? So that is also an example of a narrative about an enslaved soul group. Okay. And of course, people believe that all the earth, the beings incarnating in earth, are enslaved as well. The enslavement of this planet, though, is different than those other versions of enslavement. And the reason why is because our enslavement is more on the level of the fourth dimensional field. It's not in the Akasha necessarily. Some things are in the Akasha, but not like how it is with Alpha Centaurians. It's more of the collective fields. There's so many inceptions happening in the collective fields, it blinds us, and in that way we're not able to make real choices. And so in that way, that's how we're enslaved. It's like we're told door A, you know, this is your choice, door one or door two, right? And then we're blinded to any other option but those two options. And these options are a rock and a hard place. So it's not really any option at all. So in that way, we get tricked into participating in our own limitations, participating in our own enslavement, Okay. But actually, speaking of Lost Girl, this is one of the things I really loved about her character was she's like, well, just because door number one and two is there doesn't mean I'm going to do that. You know, she gave herself permission to invent her door number three. She always invented whatever it was that was true to her versus going with the program, which is one of the brilliant things about that show. Anyway, so in the realm of the Pachamama, where we live right now, those enslavement processes are all about the manipulation of collective fields. And this is why I went so deep into the different empowering, the layers of reclaiming your power. And gosh, I think it was a chat. It was last month where I talked about reclaiming the conception process, reclaiming the birthing process, reclaiming the, of course, the everyday walk that we have moment to moment and every day, but then also reclaiming the dying process and reclaiming the those are the facets that we need to reclaim to truly become a fully autonomous being in this world. When I say autonomous, that means actually it qualifies as one of the first stages of immortality. So I've worked with different immortal masters in this lifetime, and they talk to me about, you know, there's different stages of immortality. And the first stage of immortality is being able to retain your memories between lifetimes. Okay. So you can wake up to a level of your consciousness in this biosuit, in this here and now, in such a way where when you consciously pass from this biosuit, you are liberated from having to navigate the Bardos. And when you successfully navigate the Bardos, you can choose to come back. And if you choose to come back and experience this realm again, you retain your memories. Okay. You retain your memories. And this is actually Elmine that talked about this, because she was, I think it was in 86, July of 86, she recovered the first stage of immortal mastery. Now there were more stages that she went through later on, but that was the first stage. And this is backed up by other immortals that have no connection with the Toltecs or her particular lineage that I've had communications with. And they talk about you know, immortal masters have been on this planet for a long time, and it's not something unknown. It's actually something very known, especially in Asia. In Asia, in particular, it's so known that there's laws in China made to deter the reclamation of an immortal master. And what does the reclamation look like? This is what it looks like. So, say a lama, a Rinpoche, and is, you know, reaches his the end of his cycle in this bio suit, he samadhis, and he'll have a caretaker, he'll have a beloved disciple caretaker, you know, at his side throughout all those years, right? And that disciple slash caretaker is given the responsibility to find the reincarnation of that past lama slash Rinpoche. And they go through a whole rigmarole, really intense rigmarole of a divination process of visiting different lamas that are in charge of records of different mountains. Okay, so it's like this pilgrimage that the caretaker, beloved disciple, goes through in order to isolate where the reincarnation is going to occur, and then they isolate the family of where that this reincarnation has happened, and they take the reincarnation of the master usually before the age of two. And then they start reminding, they bring that reincarnated master back to the temple, and they start reminding them of the life that they just left. And it's usually within a few months that this reclamation happens. So the master of, say, will die in June, and then the reclamation of the reincarnation happens ideally around December. Sometimes, you know, it takes longer, but anyway, I digress. And so then by time that immortal, by the time that master reaches the age of five, they have recovery of their lifetimes before. Okay. And this is something that has been happening on this planet for many, many thousands of years. The Mayans, called the Han tribes, they had their own version of this. This is where a lot of you guys remember being warriors and going through a ceremony where you have your heart pierced. Okay. That was a graduation from the warrior level into the more to the priestly caste. So once your heart gets pierced, then your beloved finds your reincarnation and then brings you back to the mystical tradition. So this is something that's been going on all over the world, but it is in Asia and Tibet that they've been able to maintain that practice up until recently, because China has these rules now that if they catch the disciple looking for their for the reincarnation of their beloved master, it's the penalty is death. Okay, so this is a very real process to the Asians. This is not something that's very far away from reality in that culture. In Western culture, it's, you know, very far away from everyday reality. Unless you're multidimensional like us, and then, hey, this makes total sense, right? Okay, but I digressed. So the enslavement on this planet is less in the Akashic structure and more in that collective field. And this is the other reason, one of the other very important benefits to working with the Fae realm and the interdimensional beings. And it's because they teach you how to get out of these collective fields. Not only give you the keys to show you how to be out of the collective field, but also dissolving these collective fields for yourself and others. Dissolving, maybe they'll show you how you participated in anchoring this collective field. Yeah, come on in, darling. Oh, it's super windy outside, and a dear sister Starshine needs to come in out of the cold. Yeah, come on in. I'm just wrapping up. Okay. You should see her. She's all bundled up. So this is how the enslavement process works. On Earth, it's very different than these other soul groups. Now, there are people incarnating in earthly biosuits that come from these other soul groups. And then that is where the Akashic level of enslavement actually starts participating in the limitation of your here and now lifetime. Okay. So we have Dracos. We have all kinds of Dracos that are incarnating in human bodies. We have all kinds of Orions incarnating in human bodies. We have people, beings from star systems all over the place reincarnating in human bodies. And that participates into that limitation, but it is not an end all be all thing, because one of the gifts of having a biosuit gifted to us from the Pachamama, I mean, this biosuit is very unique. I mean, humanoids are all over the place, but this biosuit and this configuration is unique to the Pachamama, Mother Earth, okay? So that means all beings that are incarnating, no matter what level of soul group they come from, no matter what level of enslavement they've experienced in the soul's journey or in their soul family, they get an opportunity of liberation by simply virtue of having an earthly biosuit, okay? Because now they can liberate themselves, right? They have everything at their access to liberate themselves. It's just a matter of getting through those blind spots that are created and held in place by the collective, okay? So there are many beings like starseeds or, you know, other beings that really have memories of Alpha Centauri or memories of the Pleiadians or or different, you know, planets and Sirius and stuff like that. It's like, this is great. No big deal. You are still afforded all the beautiful miracles and empowerments that come with this biosuit. It just takes work. It just takes work. All right. I'm going to read off the last of these things. I'm going to wrap up because the hour went by so fast. I'm so glad I finally got to go over that topic though with you guys. All right. So Felicia says, was at a Stargate gathering and there was a baby crawling amongst us. She totally caught our attention when she'd stop and interact with the invisible. Yes. I think she's touching on that comment about young, usually the young kids are more in contact with the pharaoh. Okay, and then Tigger. I love the name Tigger, by the way. But all right, so Tigger, just so you know, this is actually very special because one of my first ponies that I showed in that time that I was talking about working on the farm, he was a hunter jumper, a gray. Well, he was white, but we call them grays. Anyway, his name was Tigger. That was his barn name, Tigger, because he was such a good jumper. Anyway, little sweet memory there. Okay, and then Felicia says, why have I always been suspicious of the Akashic system? I hear you say the word and my teeth buzz. Okay, yes, yeah, so the Akashic system, so this is a nesting doll to our reality and it helps form our reality. So this is like you're walking through this life right now. You are reliving all sorts of things that are in the Akasha, agreements, beliefs, trauma dramas, curses, contracts, ceremonial vows. All this stuff, is all that energy is held in the Akasha, and it's part of what's informing and creating your here and now moment. So working with the Akasha is very magical because you can clean stuff out of the Akasha and it will totally change things in your reality here. But it can be used by beings that understand multidimensionality. It can be used and manipulated by those beings to create restrictions. Okay, so a great example would be, you know, different gods. You join a priesthood or priestesshood or whatever, and you vow to always honor and venerate Zeus, so to speak, or Apollo, or what's another famous god? Aphrodite, goddess, right? Then they become cults, and then so on and so forth. So those ceremonial, those vows don't end with this life. They continue. They make an imprint in the Akasha, and now that's part of what's creating your here and now reality. So that's that. You know, we just got to wake up to it. Once you wake up to it, then you can clean it up. But when you're blind to it, that's where it up. All right. All right, one more, and then that's it. Then we're closing it out. Susan, so good to see you, sister. All right, she says, working out the difference between lies and truths. It seems so far away to get understanding of what is real and how to dispel the stuff put in our bodies, so many lies. Yeah. That's why you strive for authenticity. Because that sharpens your truth compass. And once your truth compass gets sharp enough, there's like a critical mass, you're not caught by the lies anymore. You know, it's like you may not be able to cognitively put your finger on the lie, but your body knows it and you can tell. You can tell something's off. Okay, you may not have the understanding, but there's something inside that's gnawing at you that's telling you something is off. That's the truth compass, right? And the more you value that, the more you live in your authenticity, the easier, the more synchronistic these events come to pass. And then it's not as confusing. There's still confusion because, well, these nesting dolls and the infiltration goes pretty far out there, but it's less confusing. And well, you know, dear sister, it's like when I smell bullshit, I don't have much tolerance for it. I mean, I'll play ball in certain circumstances for whatever reason. But if it's kind of like, if it's not anything that's important to me, or if that person or relationship, or whatever, doesn't matter, it's like, I will cut that off like a guillotine, man. I'm not wasting time with that. Ain't got time for that. All right, darlings, thank you for hanging out, for sticking around for this whole hour. Appreciate you guys. Remember, next week there'll be no more chats, but the following week I'll have all kinds of beautiful, juicy stories to share about our experiences with the Fae and with the Sasquatch and all the different lessons and teachings and playings and all that wonderful stuff that happens. So lots of love to you guys, and we will catch you all next time. Bye-bye.